The weekend left Colin all cropped and bothered, but he wasn't the only one. The championship is wide open as we look back at the action from Yorkshire.
Hello and welcome back to the British Touring Car Podcast. I'm going to get a few housekeeping things out of the way. It's very warm, as some of you may or may not have noticed. We have to have window open today, otherwise we may swelter to death.
Yes, for those who aren't aware, the podcast record room is in a attic-style loft. Temperature in here at the moment is a balmy 65 degrees. That's Celsius.
Feels like Celsius, yeah.
And, yeah, it is hot. So, look, if there's a little bit of car noise, we're sorry. But, yeah, the other option is we wait until this hot spot passes, which might be until next week, by which time we'll already be into the knock-heel stuff. So,
yeah,
it's hot. Bear with us. It was a hot weekend at Croft.
I was going to say, how was the weekend at Croft? Because obviously you were up there.
I was.
And it was a little bit toasty, wasn't it?
It was very, very hot at Croft. Obviously, this is the problem, if you want to call it a problem, with UK, or in fact most circuits, is they are old airfields.
Yep.
And as such, there is no shelter when it rains, there is no shelter when it's windy, and there's no shelter when it's hot. So it was a hot weekend at Croft. I will say that that's the second time I've been, and it is one of the best organised events I've been to. There was no real queue to get in the car park. I think we queued for 10 minutes, which, yeah, I'll take that.
You can accept, yeah.
Getting out, I queued longer to actually cross into the car park than I did getting out of the car park. And the whole day, actually, I thought was really, really well organised, and it's a credit. And it's interesting because obviously Croft is not an MSV circuit, right, or it's its own circuit in that way. And it's very, very well managed.
Yes, although not being an MSV circuit caused a little bit of controversy early on in the weekend, did it not?
It did. We'll get into that if you qualify a report. I just want to say one thing. We'll probably talk about Halstead and his lack of performance on track during this. What I will say is, off track, there was a massive Crazy Carts merch stand this weekend where they've got really well-priced, well, I'll use the word cheap, merchandise, which I think when you look at some of the things, some of the costings of some of the team wear now, it is quite a barrier to fans being able to buy the bits and pieces. I mean, I know when I started going that the team wear shirts that you sometimes see me wear were 15, 20 quid.
And now they're 40 quid a pop.
40 for polo, 30 for t-shirts. Yeah. So they've gone up. And look, again, effing's going up. I'm not having a go at hardcore or anything like that, but what I'm saying is it was nice and refreshing to see you could buy a Crazy Carts t-shirt for 5 quid. I mean, that's, So yeah, that was good. And what he's bought off track is really impressive, even if on track, not as impressive as we'll get to. But you're absolutely right.
A little lacking,
yeah. You're absolutely right. The action started on Saturday where it didn't rain despite the weather indicating it might. Mind you, it said Sunday was going to be cloudy and around 20 degrees. So, that was spot on as well from the Met Office. So that
did
was
you
all
take
good.
Plenty of sun cream?
Well, you'll notice that I'm not particularly red.
So no.
Yeah, I did. The only thing I've slightly back of my neck caught, but I even didn't burn on a fresh fade, which I'm quite happy about. So, yeah, we'll start the action on a dry Saturday.
So, yes, Saturday qualifying, the typical Super 6 format, so the four sessions, three qualifying rounds, and there were track limits were a subject of contention, shall we say, this weekend.
The rule is stupid that they're only monitoring two corners, and it's even more stupid that they're being monitored by people and not machines. Yeah. What I will say is that when we go onto the Jake Hill thing, Tim Harvey on the Sunday said that having watched the onboard, it probably was a track limit infringement, which is interesting in its own right, because Jake was adamant that he hadn't committed a foul. What is annoying, I think the drivers have got a real case here, is that through practice, track limits weren't being monitored.
No.
So you get used to a lot. The whole point of practice, you get your line nailed in, you get used to what you can give into a corner, what you can't give, and you find the limit, hence that's what practice is for, and then come the actual competitive stuff, you then lose in your tyres. And actually, given that practice now has a little bit more importance because it sets the grid, or the groups for qualifying, track limits should, in my view, be monitored because you are affecting the qualifying.
Yeah, it's something that we harped on about last season as well, the fact that it's only being monitored in a couple of places at Croft this weekend is just mad to me.
And clearly not being monitored in the race, because coming out of the S's in the race,
there were people that had black and white flags for track limits, but no one obviously overstepped that limit enough, despite the amount of replays we saw where drivers were going out the back of the circuit, well off track.
I didn't see Colin or Josh or Rob Huff get them for the moves they pulled wide through the S's. But there we go. It doesn't matter, does it? It's all good fun.
Qualifying got off to a really quick start as well. So in the first group, Ash Sutton's first lap time, quick lap time of the day, was the quali lap record. Just bang, straight in there on the pace. Yes, we do have a extra amount of hybrid this season, and we are going to, I think, see more lap records broken.
That's strange, because you ask Dan Cavish, the car's rubbish.
Yeah, yeah. And Rowbottom actually went and beat that by 3/10, but had his track time deleted. And then again, he had his next lap deleted, which would have been fast enough to get him through in the top six positions. However, his final lap was not good enough, and he was going to be the first major casualty in Q1A, we'll call it, along with Moffitt already out again.
Yeah.
He really doesn't have any speed.
Saving tyres.
Yes, yes, definitely. And then into Q1B, Camish had his first lap time also deleted, so the Napa's struggling with those track limits, trying to find the absolute limit. Chilton was absolutely flying, though. He then set a new qualifying lap record in Q1, went through the fastest time. He most did his time, then went back to the pits and parked up for the last 3 or 4 minutes of the session. And Morgan was probably the big casualty in the second session, with also Pearson out with Osborne, although Pearson was behind Osborne, really not looking like that pace that he had early on in the season.
No, Pearson's struggling at the minute. He said so himself. Yeah, he's in a difficult place at the moment, obviously. Yeah.
Into Q2 then, obviously 12 drivers in this session. Cook's first lap time was deleted in Q2, again, for track limits. Huff lost his first time. Hill lost his fastest lap, apparently wrongly, according to him. If you've seen the interview, you'll understand how apoplectic he was in the fact that he did everything perfectly and he was well within for every single lap in practice and qualifying. And
I think it is annoying though, is that they made such a song and dance about it, but they never actually showed the footage on the Sunday. I mean, that footage has to exist. Harvey's seen it, allegedly, so it has to exist.
The fact that we had that camera angle on Sunday showing the cars running wide at that point, which was being monitored, that camera was there for that exact reason. There was one person watching that camera to go, right, that driver's gone wide. And as you say, if Harvey's seen the footage, you can't really argue too far against it. There were thoughts at the time that maybe a car had been called incorrectly, or a driver number had been called incorrectly. But yes, he was very cross in his interview.
Yeah, he was. Let's say, without seeing it, it's very difficult for us to comment on it. We just have to rely on the stewards getting things right, which we'll get to in races, particularly race number two. yeah, it doesn't help when you then don't see the footage yourself. You're not able to make your own mind up, which I think is a problem.
Yeah. Dobble also lost the lap time in that session. Chilton struggled for pace in this session for some reason.
He had a problem with the car, but he wouldn't tell anybody what it was. He was very guarded about this all day on Sunday, and if he was asked about it, that they developed something that he wasn't going to go into, and it affected him in race one and two as well.
So Chilton, Hill, Dobble, Cook, Watson and Smiley were all out in this session, but a credit to Chris Smiley, he finished 7th and was so close to getting into that Super 6 shootout.
Great effort by a car I completely wrote off going into it.
And then we got down into the Super 6 format, where Camish, Ingram, Huff, Arrotate Smith, Sutton, Turkington would all be competing to take pole position, and it was actually Turkington's first proper lap time, which did it for him, basically. No one could beat it. Camish ended up 2nd, from Ingram in 3rd, Aaron Taylor-Smith in a very creditable 4th, along with Huff's best qualifying in the session in 5th, and Sutton in 6th.
Yeah, Huff was a real surprise, because the Toyota, I mean, Cook felt that they got set up wrong and it cost him, but actually, Watson and Moffat were nowhere all weekend, actually, as we'll come to.
Yeah,
Huff really did surprise me. He looked on it this weekend.
We both sort of mentioned in the preview that the Toyotas we thought were going to be thereabouts. But Huff was a real nice surprise this weekend. And I think he said that the team had been doing a lot of work in the mid-season break over the 4 weeks, taking weight out of the car, which was quite interesting, working out where the weight balance is in the car, as well as a couple of new bits developed and put onto the car, including a new exhaust system. But yeah, we'll get into the races on Sunday now.
Race one then, and the biggest thing to decide going into this race was what tyre were people going to use, because this weekend we've had the soft and we had the hard. Obviously race one is a free choice,
yep.
And then in race two, those who finish in the top 10 have to use the hardest tyre available to them. If they've already used the hard tyre, then the hardest tyre available to them is the soft. The top six, you'd have thought, would have all gone for softs. However,
I thought it was going to be a lot more than that.
Yeah, I did.
I was quite surprised and taken aback when we saw, obviously, them come into the grid, that all but seven of them were on hard tyres.
Yeah, and I think that the one that shocked me the most was Rob Huff, because obviously he'd done so well to get into the top six, and actually because Smiley, actually, for the same reason, because he was seven before. That's an interesting thing. But Huff had said that he believed that the heat would reduce the deficit between the tyres, which wasn't quite true.
This isn't the first time that we've seen Huff take this strategy
either.
He did at Snetterton as and it paid off for the team there. And I think they've learned from that and have gone forward that the less amount of drivers on the soft tyre in that first race, the more benefit you get throughout the rest of the weekend.
Yeah, and I don't know how late they can put the choice in. Do they get to see what other people do first, or is it all at the same time?
They have to make the choice before they leave the pit lane to go to the grid.
So they could potentially see what people are doing left and right. I also think if you're Huff, you gamble that the people in front of you are going to take softs.
Yeah.
So
to make the most of
the
position.
So he did. It paid off, as you say, that so many other people took hards. Mm. The people who started with softs, as you say, the front four,
obviously Huff was fifth.
Apologies, yeah.
Sutton in sixth, Hill in 11th, and most importantly, Housted.
This is bizarre. the Housted one is, I don't know if it's started kicking it already. That is bizarre.
It is.
Get it off out of the way now and hope and try and make pace, try and go forward on the softs the rest of the race.
I agree.
Yeah, bonkers.
If you're starting at the back, you haven't got any...
You have to go softs.
You haven't got any further to go back.
Yeah, you have to go softs for the first. Sorry, you have to go hard. Get out of the way. Yeah.
And then you're left with the softs for the rest of the weekend. It was a mad decision.
Knowing that at least six drivers, if not more, are going to have to take the hards. Yeah, bonkers call. The Hill one was interesting. Harvey will get very angry with him in race two. I think Hill is in the impossible position here because you've got to try and make up yesterday. You have three title rivals all ahead of you and going to be vying for a podium.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're not so far ahead. Yeah. There's enough time left that it doesn't matter if you don't get in front of them. However, you've kind of got to try and make up some ground from yesterday.
And I think that's why he knew he had ground to make up, which is why he's gone for that soft in race one. But the fact that only six others have gone on the soft...
Yeah, but he would have known that Colin was going to be on the soft.
Yeah, yeah.
And he would have known or have gambled that Camish, Sutton and Ingram would all gone soft as well.
Yeah.
So actually, he might as well go soft, knowing they'll all be on hard next race and there'll be no difference between the car and he can fight them with equal machinery.
The thing is, with what happened in race two, which we'll get onto, hindsight is a wonderful thing, which Harvey got onto about, I've gone for the hard in race one. You only know that because of now what's happening.
Exactly.
In race two.
And actually, Rowbottom, who started on the hard in race one, made incredible progress through the field.
Decent progress.
A Croft is difficult to overtake at.
Yeah, can be.
And with cars that were either on soft, or sorry, on hard, hard tyres as well, I thought he did pretty well. I know you don't, anyway, there were the tyre choices. To be honest with you, that's probably as much as we need to say about race one. It's pretty dull. Lights the flag for Colin Turkington. Off the line well. As you'd expect, the softs went off into the distance and the hards fell back through the field.
Yeah, Ingram managed to get past Camish fairly early on. Camish had to take to one side of the chicane while Ingram went through the normal racing line. Hill had a decent start because he was on those softs and managed to get up to 9th by the end of lap one. But I thought he then struggled to make progress quickly. It was sort of like a car a lap that he would get past until he got to that top six.
In mitigation, he had to pass Chilton.
Yeah.
Huff.
Cook.
They're not easy drivers to pass.
No, I'll take that.
And Chilton, is a very difficult drive to pass. You don't quite know what Chilton's going to be there, do you? I think
certainly didn't in race two.
No, as we get to it. So no, I think you're right, but I also think that Hill couldn't afford to take any chances. And those cars weren't doing what the cars in race two were then doing, which was letting people by. Huff did let Hill through, yeah, actually. But Chilton and Cook made it slightly harder. Yeah. Huff did for him. We didn't in race two, we saw basically England put the indicators on, but we'll get to that. I thought Sutton was quite feisty in trying to come through the field here, elbows out a little bit, bit raggedy. He did say going into the weekend that he's now got a mental spreadsheet which he knows what points he has to score relative to everybody else, which seems an awful lot of...
He really wasn't willing to share that with Luis, though, was he?
No, it's just an awful lot of mental maths to be doing whilst also trying to drive a car around a circuit. But, yeah, he did say that the old Sutton was going to come out a little bit. We'll have to see if that pays off for him. I'm not sure it will, personally. I think this year's championship will be won by a steady hand. And actually, I think Cavendish is starting to gather real momentum, as we'll get to in our closing thoughts. De Lion got a time penalty of 10 seconds, presumably for being out of position or jumping the start. They didn't even get to the right number, so we're not sure what the actual reasoning was. Then the race sort of settled down into a fairly dull procession until Osborne decided that he was going to try his hand at Rallycross, which he didn't do particularly well.
There was a bit of lorry driving this year.
Losing it on his own at Sunny. Yeah, jackknife for lorry because he was doing that. Lost it on his own at Sunny. I'm really starting to lose patience with Osborne, I have to say. I'm getting fed up with it. Because everything is set up for him to succeed.
Yeah.
Everything is set up for him to succeed.
He is getting more Stroll-esque, isn't he? More Lance.
I was going to say Perez, personally.
The fact that it's his dad's team, he's still there because it's his dad's
team. But in terms of what you've got there to succeed, this is almost Perez levels of, you've got a front-running car.
Yeah.
All the other drivers in that team have got a podium.
Yep.
And you're so far off it.
Yeah.
And those sort of mistakes are just silly. Cook, I want to introduce a debate, because we like debates.
Go on then.
Meatball flags have been a bit contentious this year, haven't they? With Napa sort of making changes to the rear of the car to make sure they don't flap over again.
They've certainly used an extra few self-tappers to keep those rear bits of bodywork.
And it seems to work, because in race two, or was it race three? Race three, Colin did biff the back of Sutton a couple of times, and those arches did not go anywhere. Nope. So... Cook had a flappy fuel latch, which isn't used for fuel in touring cars, it's used for the air jack. Should that have been a meatball flag?
No,
it shouldn't have been. But based on this new directive of any flapping bodywork is going to be... Now, let me just play devil's avocado.
Go on.
I'm a millennial, nearly. had that flicked off and flown backwards into an air intake, Sam.
It wouldn't have done, but
it could.
It's the fact that it is already a hinged part. It's a very small...
A bonnet is a hinged part, but if that flaps up, it's...
I thought you were going to go for a door.
that is also a hinged part.
Yeah.
I agree with you, it's not a meatball flag. But based on how stringent and how they've been with the directive this year, I'm slightly surprised he got away. I'm glad common sense prevails.
Yes.
But I think if you're Sutton or Smart, even Cook, who had a bit of flappy bodywork earlier in the season, you'd be a bit aggrieved. Cook wouldn't be aggrieved himself, but you'd be a bit aggrieved about the give. So what now constitutes flapping bodywork and what doesn't? Because there's supposed to be a zero tolerance, and I'm going to get to this in a bit further in a moment as well, because actually that comes in race two. I'll pick that up in race two.
No worries.
Towards the end of the race, Sutton half-heartedly start to challenge Cavendish for third. Filled his wing mirrors a couple of times.
Closed in a bit, didn't he?
Waved a little bit, and then sort of that gave up. Then the only final bit of action from the race is that Smiley went off at Sunny, which is a real shame, because he'd been having a good race up until that point. He did, in his defence, have power steering issues.
Yeah, he had dropped down a little bit through the field, which we kind of expected in a race trim. But the fact that he had that big slide there just was a shame, and it kind of set the rest of his weekend. It could have been a hell of a lot better.
Agreed.
If it weren't for that, I think.
It did keep me alive in my Osborne prediction, as we'll get to later on.
But yeah, it was a lights to flag victory with it. It's kind of what we saw Colin do at Brands earlier this year.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh God, are we going to see another...
Well, funnily enough, I never thought that, because of the fact Huff hadn't started and he kept his position
within
sort of that top seven.
Yeah.
I said to Nagy, who I was with, I said, he will win race two. And I was, wasn't quite right.
No.
But I said he was going to
do it. Close enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, and that, that gave me a little bit more hope that it wasn't going to be another license flag in race
two. Do you know what was also quite disappointing is the fact that that penalty for De Leon, the 10-second penalty, dropped him out of the points. And he was racing quite consistently and easily with Watson and Doble up for about 12th for most of that race.
Yeah,
holding his own.
He looked really good this weekend.
One thing I must say is that the Toker engines have had a little turn up on the boost over the summer break, which is why I think we're seeing a little bit of upturn in pace from them.
Yeah, same for PMR as well. Taylor Smith was a little bit quicker than... I certainly wouldn't have expected him to have got through to top six qualifying.
No.
If you told me that beforehand.
Yep.
Okay, so the final, or top 10 for race number one, it was Colin Turkington from Tom Ingram from Dan Camish, Sutton fourth, Aaron Taylor-Smith in fifth, Jake Hill getting through to sixth, Rob Puff seventh, and would be the first car to start on soft tyres for race two, Josh Cook eighth, Tom Chilton ninth, Dan Rowbottom 10th. So Rowbottom did pretty well. Come to be top 10.
Yeah, it was a shame that he wasn't further up in qualifying, obviously, for your prediction as well. But he showed throughout the weekend that he had some decent pace there as well.
Absolutely. That race win for Colin made that 15 at Croft for him, which is by far the most wins at a circuit, or that circuit, and 70 overall. So not bad stats.
I think it was something like 120-odd for WSR as well.
127, I think, from memory. I haven't noted that one down, though. Which also, I mean, Colin's won most of those at WSR as well, so you'd say he's probably taken a good 55 for WSR, which isn't bad.
No. We'll move straight on to race two now. Getting into race two then, and as we mentioned, the top six drivers would all be starting on the hard tyre, with the top starter on source being Rob Huff. Expecting them to fall through the field, were you?
Yeah, I was. And actually, I'll ask you a question now, but I think we're going to take it away and do a 10 minutes with. But yeah. I think this race really does highlight that you probably don't need the hybrid and the Tyrex. One or the other is probably enough. And I think that the disparity between the two tyres was far too great this weekend.
I think that point was raised in commentary or by Paul O'Neill in the fact that he's having both of them together too much. But it certainly does shake the order up, which I kind of think that's what Gow wants.
Yeah, but does it make it too gimmicky when you've basically...
Possibly.
This race developed into two classes, your hards and your softs.
Yeah.
Now, maybe the answer is that you have softs and mediums rather than have such a gap between the tyres.
Mm.
And you can then keep the hybrid. I think, as you say, what we'll do is we'll pick that. We've got another couple of breaks in the season.
Yeah.
After Knockhill in particular, so we'll pick...
I've had many thoughts on how could be best to do it, but yeah, I think 10 minutes with... Later on in the season, once we've seen a couple of variations with the hard, medium and soft together like that, we'll be the best place to pick that up
on.
Turkington had a good start, but Ingram managed to get him early down at Tower.
Yeah, bold and brilliant.
Yeah, he Colin said it on the grid, I think, he normally by the time he got down to Tower, the front tyres were just gradually getting warm enough. So Ingram knew that he had to strike quickly, and that's certainly what he did. Hill was down to ninth on the first lap. He had a...
Yeah, force wide at turn one.
Yeah, but you'd expect him to have a fast start, I know, on the hard tyres.
He did, and then he got...
But then he got biff wide.
Well, he was running wide and couldn't get back in, basically. He tried to go around the outside of people, who then moved over, and he got pushed through the gravel, which biffed him out wide and... shuffled him back down the order. His start was pretty good, and Ingram's start was pretty good as well, albeit slightly on the grass.
Yes. Consequently, he would then go on to battle a little bit with Chilton, which we'll get on to a little bit later. Sutton managed to get past Camish on lap two.
Just. Oh, there was a bit of bashing door handles there, wasn't there?
It was a robust pass, wasn't it? Which is something that we might see a little bit more from Sutton this season.
I think we're going to see a...
teammate war.
A Shed and Neil moment at some point between these two, because they're both very much in the title fight.
Yes.
This time, of course, last year, we were seeing team orders in effect at Croft with the moving out the way for one another. We're not going to see that this season. This could be very, very interesting.
No, I think the fact that they haven't got that massive advantage over the Hyundais and the BMWs like they had last season they can't really afford to do that now, can they?
No, they need to find a way to work together while still competing their own championship, otherwise they're going to hold each other up.
Yeah.
And particularly when you've got people like Tom, who's, I think Honda's got the greatest chassis on the grid this season, and I think BMW, Hills BMW in particular, has got power that for some reason Colin doesn't seem to quite have, but yeah.
Rob Huff was up to fourth by the end of lap two, and he was pretty quick at that early stage. We kind of knew he was going to be the first driver to make moves, but Cook and Rowbottom were trying to follow him through. Sutton and Turkington then got together down into Tower. Now, the first real incident of the race
weekend
for me, from my point of view, it looks as if Turkington's braked a little bit earlier than Ash is expecting. Both were well on the inside, Turkington defending from Sutton, and just as Sutton's moved out as Turkington's braking, he clipped the back of him, sending Turkington on the grass straight on over the